Coming up in this episode of Mark My Words, we talk about the markets, coal and energy, big new apartment projects in North Fremantle, ownership of Perth pubs, modern glass, and some big moves amongst the leaders at WA's police.
Welcome to Mark My Words, the weekly podcast from Business News, with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer discussing the important business news and data stories from Western Australia.
Welcome to Mark My Words. I'm Mark Beyer, joined this week by Jordan Murray.
Been called up to the seniors again.
Yeah, good to have you, Jordan, while Mark Pownall is away. So let's kick off, Jordan.
The markets. It's a big story this week, isn't it? Almost 500 points wiped off the S&P ASX 200 this week, down from about 7,000 on Tuesday to 6,500 at close yesterday. And I think it's below that now, in fact, is it not?
It's sliding lower and lower. Look, let's start off with some big perspective on this one here. It's a trend that's happening around the world where stock markets peaked either late last year or early this year, and we're seeing some very major corrections happening. The US market has probably led the way. The Dow Jones Index, that's the one that tracks top 20 blue chip stocks in the US, that's down about 18% for the year. The S&P 500, which is a broader index of 500 stocks, down about 23%. And then the NASDAQ index, which focuses mainly on tech stocks, that's down about 33%. So the scale of those falls, I guess, also reflects the scale of the rise that preceded them. You know, it was the investments in the tech stocks that played a really big part in the strong rise of the US market. The Australian market never actually rose quite as much, and consequently the fall we're seeing here hasn't been as severe. So the fall in Australian shares from their peak has been about 15 to 16%, depending on what point in time you're listening to this podcast. Nonetheless, a pretty significant correction. The really big drivers here, I guess it started Friday last week in the US, Friday night our time. The US released some inflation data showing inflation was higher than people had been expecting. Hence, that raised concern about interest rates being pushed higher and faster than previously had been anticipated. That was followed during the week when the US Fed, led by Jerome Powell, announced an increase of 75 basis points in the Fed funds rate. Now, that had been signalled in the lead up to it, but it was as high as anybody had been expecting. And that's the biggest single increase in US rates since, I think, the 1990s. So a pretty dramatic move. Of course, it followed the Reserve Bank of Australia lifting rates here by 50 basis points. You know, that in itself was a pretty significant move. The US going even harder. The big question then is, okay, how much more will the Fed do? And what impact will it have on the US and therefore the global economy? I guess the short answer is there's a growing concern that they will not be able to deliver a, quote, soft landing. There's a risk, a growing risk, that the US and other economies will go into a recession. That, of course, is what central bankers are trying to avoid, that, but it's getting harder and harder as these inflationary pressures become more acute and their interest rate moves become sharper and larger. So some real challenges there for stock markets. In terms of the fallout, I guess the biggest impact, as I mentioned, has been in things like tech stocks, which have been, there's been, I guess, almost a speculative bubble there. And then the most extreme example of that speculative investment, of course, has been cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin, down about 70%. So we're going into this world where interest rates are coming up. The, you know, interest rates were around about zero, so there was no value in keeping your money in the bank. But you're getting to a point now where people are saying, well, actually, if I keep my money in a safe, secure investment, I'm actually getting a return on it. Do I really want to go into high-risk things? So that whole risk-reward equation is being recalibrated. And one last point I'll mention around all this. When you're looking at it from an Australian perspective, we had the labour force figures out during the week, confirming that we've got this extremely strong labour, or very tight labour market. National unemployment rate down around 4% and a bit. Western Australia continues to have the lowest unemployment rate in the country, and that strength in the labour market just adds to this whole narrative around growing demand pressures, growing cost pressures, and therefore central banks having to go harder on interest rates.
Whether or not this was as low as the market could go, and it seems as if that's definitely not the case. And I mean, for perspective, which I think is important here, the lowest position for the ASX 200 was, at least in the last 2 years, was in 20th of March 2020, when Australia shut its international border, and it went down to 4,800 points. And of course, if we go back to the 6th of March 2009, with the GFC, it got down to about 3,000 points. So obviously there is enough capacity to go further down. One thing I did look at before coming in here today was some of the specific companies, how they've performed in the past week. So against the ASX 200 being down by about 8%, the only real overperformers I could find were Northern Star Resources, who were up by about 1.5%. Otherwise, Stockland and BHP went down, but by not as much as the ASX 200 overall. But, you know, look further down this list I've got here. Woodside down 8.9%, REA Group down 9.5%, Dexus down 10.5%, Qantas down 14.9%, Block down by 24.5%. Tech companies, do you think they've been overvalued?
Personally, I'm not a financial planner, but personally, yes. Like I said, I think there's that whole, we've come through a period where it was easy to make money by taking a speculative stance. The other area, or the other sector that's been smashed is buy now, pay later. Mm. So Zipco is an ASX stock that's been one of the hardest hit. They've come way off. You know, these were, you know, new sectors, very innovative, but, you know, a great thing during a boom period, but not a good thing to be into when the economy gets tougher. You know, Zipco, essentially it's a high-risk consumer loan business. Anything else that's not generating real cash flow and real profits, which is often the case in the tech world, you know, people are going to look at them with a much more questioning perspective.
Mm, definitely something that we should look at very closely in the coming months. Now, switching to coal. We switched to coal, but we're actually switching off coal, it seems, by 2030. The Energy Minister, Bill Johnson, has said that Synergy, which operates the two coal-fired power stations down in Collie, they'll shut off by 2027 and 2029. And we'll have no gas-fired power stations commissioned after 2030 either.
Yeah, so look, this was a very significant announcement on Tuesday. Both the Premier and the Energy Minister, Bill Johnson, went down to Collie for this announcement. I guess the only surprise was the extent to which they brought forward the timing of these closures. You know, we've all known that coal mining at Collie and coal-fired power in Western Australia has a limited future. Now we've got some certainty, and I think that's been almost universally welcomed. So as you say, two big power stations still operating at Collie, government-owned power stations. The Collie Power Station will shut in 2017, and Mooja, the final units there, will close in 2029. And that effectively signals that Premier Coal, which is one of the two big coal mining companies down there, owned by the Chinese group Yancoal, it's also coming to the end of its life. There's still the privately owned Blue Waters Power Station. That gets most of its coal from Griffin Coal Mining Company, which is owned by the Indian group Lanco. We haven't had any signals yet from Blue Waters as to what they're planning to do. Blue Waters got itself into financial problems. Its debt was sold off, and there's some private equity groups that have come in and bought the debt, and we suspect have a big say over the future of that. And they've been having disputes as well with Griffin, which has also had huge financial problems. So look, there's certainly a very uncertain outlook for both of those organisations. As far as what it means for WA, I guess there's a couple of key drivers here. You know, one is this sort of longer-term goal of improving Western Australia's environmental performance, and getting out of coal mining and coal-fired energy generation is part of that. A related trend around that has been this massive uptake in rooftop solar. I think it's about 2,000 megawatts of capacity. In fact, 2,042 megawatts of capacity has already been installed in rooftop solar, you know, the photovoltaic on rooftops. Now, for context, that's about double the capacity of the two coal-fired power stations that will be shut down at Collie. This has created big issues for Western Power, which manages the network in Western Australia, where the coal-fired power stations often are not needed. And then, of course, when the weather changes, you've got to crank them up. That all becomes very expensive. This is a real challenge around sort of network management. Gas-fired power stations, you know, the old, what we call the peaking plants, I guess they're easier to turn on and off or crank them up and down. They have a role. But the other big thing that the government's talking about more now is storage. So we've already seen some investments in battery storage. So this is putting in large-scale lithium batteries. Synergy is already building a 100-megawatt battery down at Kwinana. Alinta's looking at doing similar things. And there's going to be a lot more investment in that space. But the other area we're going to see a lot more in, or certainly the government's talking about, is pumped hydro. Now, that's a new concept for the southwest of Western Australia. It happens in other parts of the world. But essentially what this means is that during the day, when your solar farms and your wind farms are generating lots of energy, you pump water up the hill to a big storage area, which might, for instance, be an old coal mine void near Collie. And then in the evening, when you need more power, you release the water, comes down through a turbine, and you've got sort of hydropower. The concept's very simple, hasn't been applied in any meaningful way in the southwest of WA. There's a very small project under development at Walpole, but in that case, they're talking about dams on farms. Very small, tiny compared to what the government is talking about. They've quoted a number of 800 megawatts of pumped hydro. So big changes in the energy market. And of course, big changes for Collie. It's obviously the coal mines and the power stations are the biggest employers in town. The government's quoted a figure of 1,200 jobs will be affected by these changes. They've already pumped in more than $100 million into things like tourism and bike trails around Collie to try and generate new jobs. There's some new manufacturing facilities down there. And the government's talking about spending another, I think, $530 million was the amount they're now talking. Now, they're being a bit cute with that because there's about $200 mil for job creation and industry attraction. But there's also $300 mil, which is going to be spent on decommissioning the power stations. So, you know, that'll provide some work, but it's not exactly attracting new long-term jobs. I think overall, these changes make sense. The trend that we're seeing in power generation, we're sort of moving in a positive direction there. And in terms of Collie, I think the government has done a good job of signalling to the community that change has to come, but also coming in behind that with some really serious investment in trying to create new opportunities so that the community there just doesn't die.
Mm. And certainly I think that that's politically in a lot of different countries, the UK being the Midlands, in the US throughout the coal mining belt of states there, and even in Australia and Queensland, New South Wales, getting people off of coal and into renewable energy has proven a political headache. So I think you're right there in saying that there has been quite a concerted effort here to advertise that change isn't necessarily a bad thing and that investment can come alongside it. So no, that is a good point to mention. And you said there before about hydro, pumped hydro being put into the SWIC. That is a very interesting addition, isn't it? Because Tasmania is the only state that really uses that at scale. To the best of my knowledge, WA and SA are the only states that don't use it, but the other mainland states that do use it only have it as a very small segment of their energy generation. So it's a bit of a strange addition, but it'll be interesting to see how that works in the end. One thing I thought was an interesting thought bubble to put out there this morning was Before we came in here, I looked at AMO. I looked at the where we're drawing our energy generation from, and at 10:15...
We're talking about the Australian Energy Market Operator. So the group that operates the wholesale electricity market in WA.
Yes, that's the one. At 10:15 this morning, it was about a 50-50 mix between renewables and fossil fuels on the network. So I find that quite interesting. In a lot of ways, we're already moving beyond the use of coal and gas to power our homes and power our businesses. So I don't think that it's necessarily going to be too disruptive to pursue this shutdown of the coal-fired power plants. But I think one thread I've picked up on this week is, you know, we had South32 come out. They said that, you know, the closure of coal-fired power plants wasn't a big deal to them. They'll be using gas for smelting purposes rather than coal, I believe. And even if you look over in New South Wales, BHP couldn't sell its Mount Arthur coal mine in the Hunter Valley. It had no viable offer to purchase that coal mine. So that'll now close by 2030. But obviously, this is coming in the context of a Labor government coming in. It's legislating its emissions targets. It's said that it would like more aggressive emissions targets than emissions reductions targets, I should say, than the previous government. Still, there was a story you wrote this morning, Mark, that I thought was worth noting, and that was that the national market operator has this morning indicated that new capacity will be needed by 2025, and that was regardless of the decision to shut down Moosa and Collie.
Yeah, so this is the annual update that AEMO puts out, I guess highlighting the need for this continued investment. So they're saying that by 2025, there'll actually be a shortfall between demand for energy and supply in Western Australia. And that if nothing happens, that shortfall would grow to about 300 megawatts by the end of the decade. Now, we shouldn't be alarmed by that, because they often predict a shortfall out in future years. And I guess they're signalling to the market, there's the opportunity for people to invest. So let's make sure we plug that gap before we get there. There's another little snippet out of the AEMO report that I'll share with listeners, which I thought illustrated just how dramatically we call upon the energy network. So in broad terms, there's about 4,500 megawatts of capacity in the Southwest integrated system. AEMO says that when solar and wind are cranking, the minimum operational demand, that's the minimum demand for electricity from the grid, it's fallen as low as 760 megawatts. So in other words, lots of those coal and gas power stations just aren't needed. They've projected that by 2026, that minimum operational demand could fall as low as 11 megawatts. In other words, we'll pretty much need nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sort of the challenge that's required in this world we're moving to. Every year, people are putting on more and more rooftop solar. We're developing more wind farms. We need to sort of balance all these different areas of supply and demand. And I thought that illustrated that challenge quite well. And look, and while we're talking about big changes in the energy market, BP, we think of them as a global oil and gas producer, announced during the week they're buying a 40% stake in what is envisaged to be the largest renewable energy project in the country. This is called the Asian Renewable Energy Hub up in the Pilbara. The plan is to install both wind and solar power to generate up to 26 gigawatts of power. Now that's just a phenomenally huge project. It's been backed so far by some international groups, Intercontinental Energy and CWP Global, with backing from Macquarie Capital. Now, the folks at Macquarie love to invest in infrastructure and energy. And now they've got BP coming in with a 40% stake, and they're planning to operate this one. So I just think that's sort of quite telling. The plan is to use that energy to produce either green hydrogen or green ammonia. So there's a pointer to the future. Another one very briefly, Fortescue Metals Group has announced a deal with the German truck manufacturer Liebherr. They're going to buy about 120 big haul trucks, and by 2025 they're planning to have zero emission haul trucks operating in their iron ore mines up in the Pilbara, or at least the first one. and they want to get their whole fleet over onto zero emissions. At the moment, they're all run on diesel. They use huge volumes of diesel, I think 200 million litres, Fortescue says, per year. So look, there's another little example about an old-fashioned dirty industry where the operators are trying to make some big changes.
Indeed, it seems that businesses in some instances are ahead of where policymakers are, but I digress. Mark, Matilda Bay Brewing Corporation, the former site over in North Fremantle, Parcel Property and Three Oceans Property, are looking to redevelop that.
That's right. There's a lot of interest in this story from our readers during the week. So it's that prominent site on Stirling Highway in North Fremantle, basically overlooking Leighton Beach, over the railway yards there. It's been vacant for a long time. Used to be an automotive assembly factory.
Ford.
Operated by Ford. Then it was the site for Matilda Bay Brewing, sort of one of the original, if not the original, sort of craft brewer in Western Australia. It sat vacant for quite a while, but Three Oceans, now they're the group that has been battling for years to get approval for a big apartment project at Scarborough Beach. They still haven't progressed that one. But now they're talking about spending $185 million developing an apartment project, about 200 apartments over, I think, several towers, the tallest of which will be about 16 stories. Now, this has gone off for planning approval. And I'm sure, like all of these high-rise projects, there'll be lots of passionate debate around it. But I guess it's, you know, another signal about the changing face of Perth, about this imperative to get more density into our suburbs. And a site like that, it's next to public transport. It's an old industrial area, sort of in an established suburb. You know, to me, that's a no-brainer for more of this higher density development. And also, you know, like a lot of these big apartment projects, there's sort of public facilities in there. I think there's talk about getting a brew pub.
Indeed.
And some other public facilities and shops in there as well. And just down the road, there's another site at on the corner of McCabe Street. That's been bought by Perth developer Exel Group. We reported this a little while ago. They've got a $500 million development proposal for that one. And of course, that is just around the corner from the site where Gary Dempsey's development company has already built several, smaller apartment developments. But I guess putting all those together, it's a little sort of pocket of Perth that's going to see some really big change.
Indeed, it fits neatly into the Fremantle's coming back story that we tend to write every 12 months. One thing I found interesting about this was a couple of weeks ago I was having a discussion with somebody who serves on council in Fremantle, and she was making the point that it's really nice to have all of this development, particularly commercial development, to have all these venues coming through, but you get to a point almost where there's a bit too much. She was talking about down in South Fremantle. I won't name the particular proponent, but they want to build another one of these venues in that area, and you have to wonder after a while, is there enough, not amenity, but infrastructure to meet the needs of the people who already live there? Have they already kind of come to the end of the gentrification process? So I do look at products like this, and I wonder if maybe North Fremantle's come to the end of its gentrification process. Although I gather that side of the river in Fremantle, it's not quite as highly developed as, you know, South Fremantle and the city centre itself.
Look, there are certainly some pockets of North Fremantle that which then sort of blends into Mosman Park.
Mm.
But, you know, the bits that overlook the river, there's some very attractive developments just there. It's the bits that are closest to the highway and then the railway line overlooking the beach, where the opportunity awaits.
Hopefully the housing there is affordable. And in other news, pubs. There's a major East Coast group that have come into Perth and they've purchased a handful of well-known pubs.
They certainly have. Australian Venue Co. Now, they already are quite a big owner of pubs in Perth. So it's kind of interesting when you go down to your local to have a drink, not really knowing who sits behind the venue. There's a good chance nowadays that Australian Venue Co. will be the landlord. They've got a total of 19 venues across WA at the moment. After doing two deals during the week, One of which was with Colonial Leisure Group. They've actually done a property swap. So the Raffles Hotel and the Royal in East Perth are now owned by Australian Venue Co. And Colonial's picked up a couple of other pubs in Melbourne. And then the bigger transaction was with Arc Group. So they're a Perth-based sort of family company. They've got seven venues, including the Bassendean Hotel, the Scarborough Beach Bar, the Generous Squire in the city, that have been bought by Australian Venue Co. That leaves Arc Group with just one asset. That's the Paddington in Mount Hawthorn, which recently changed hands. And so I was in there recently. A modest reno and upgrade. And then Colonial Leisure Group, which had also had been a big player in this market here. They've only got one venue, the Print Hall in the city, which I believe is also not trading just at the moment while they do a renovation in there as well. So a fair bit going on. But I guess it shows this corporatisation of that sector of the market.
Indeed, and I had a look at AVC before we came into the studio today, and I recall I wrote about them back in 2020 when they purchased a Coles portfolio of pubs and restaurants for about $200 million, and at the time they'd acquired some venues here in Perth. I believe the Vic Park Hotel was one of them, and they spent some money doing that up. At the moment, they're doing up the Claremont Hotel as well. But yeah, you're right. They own quite a lot of property here, and it is probably more than likely that if you're going for a drink somewhere, it's in an AVC-owned venue. But again, I had a little bit of a look at their portfolio. Most of their stuff is in Queensland, only a very small segment of it in WA, so I wonder how much stuff they've got throughout the rest of the country. I think Victoria and New South Wales is where the bulk of the other properties they own are. But yeah, you're right. Go even further back, and AVC is majority owned by KKR, which is a US-based NYSE-listed private equity firm. So there you go. You never really know the depths of foreign ownership until you go and do this very brief research before, mark my words. Now, in some more disappointing news, Modern Glass has shut its doors. The Mannington-based company was trading for about 75 years, employed 45 people, but costs, supply and staffing were simply too much.
Yeah, look, this is a... I guess modern. If you think about glass supply in Perth, Modern Glass is a brand that's been prominent for a very long time. So anyone in the building trade would know of them very well. Their managing director, Doug Stewart, wrote out to customers during the week to let them know that they were closing up the operation. As you say, there was a number of drivers behind that. And I think they were, I guess, indicative of pressures that many businesses in Perth and around the country are feeling. One, constraints on stock supply, you know, these sort of global supply chain issues that we're seeing at the moment. Well, we've been seeing them for quite some time and very slow to get better. So that was one big issue they had. Secondly, rising operating costs. You know, we started off talking about inflation and what impact that's having on markets. But it's, you know, it's hitting real businesses. And thirdly, challenges in staffing. You know, this is number one issue that businesses in WA have been talking about for a couple of years now, just getting the people they need. So when you get all three of those together, it's a really tough environment. Despite the fact that we've got record, I think, or close to record numbers of houses being built in WA at the moment, and pretty healthy pipeline of commercial construction as well. So the demand side should not be a problem, but there's all these things on the supply side. Now they're the second big player to come out of that sector in recent years. Back in 2017, CSR owned the Viridian business. They shut down their Jandakot glass factory that year. So my understanding, there's about three significant players left in the market. Walsh's Glass, they've also been around a long time, along with Cooling Brothers and Tough Glass, which is a relatively new entrant to the market. So, and maybe others out there, but look, always sad in a way to see a very prominent Perth business brand shut down their operations.
But I think it is important to note, the company was a major supplier for Affinity Windows, which in turn was a supplier for BGC. As I understand it, Affinity Windows already has other suppliers lined up, so there shouldn't be any big negative outcome for construction as a result of this. But I think, as you say, it is a sad outcome, and obviously a sad outcome for the 45 people who were employed at Modern Glass. Now over to the police force. Big move for Gary Drybergs, and of course Cole Blanche is in the top job now.
That's right. So for context here, Chris Dawson, the police commissioner, will shortly become governor of Western Australia, taking over from Kim Beazley. So that threw up the big opportunity of who's going to take over as police commissioner. Gary Drybergs and Cole Blanche had been the deputies in the police service. Gary Drybergs retired just a little while ago, and Mark Pownall broke the news that he is moving into business as head of strategic partnerships for a Leaderville-based tech company, GenViz. Now, it was GenViz that developed the G2G passes that were used here in Western Australia, both for people sort of coming into the state and also for people that are quarantining at home. And around that, they've developed a suite of products which they're now thinking there's a big opportunity here to take that technology to international markets. The company is set up by Kirsten Butcher, a former 40 under 40 winner. She's targeted Canada as their first big international opportunity, seeing it's sort of a similar market to Australia. And for Gary Drybergs, well, he said to Mark Pownall when he was being interviewed for this story, he said, look, he did have that opportunity to apply for the commissioner's role or to go into business. And he decided to make the call, retire, and join GenViz. So look forward to watching progress by that WA company. And then that, of course, left the field open for Cole Blanche, who has been selected and confirmed this week as the new commissioner. A 30-year veteran of the police service, has experienced interstate. He worked for a time at the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission. I think known for having, I guess, in tandem with that, you know, a real focus on using technology. And look, I think he's a very big man. He has sort of a real presence. That's what I think of him. So we're going to be seeing a lot more of him. So, some notable moves there.
He is a big man. In fact, one of the most amusing parts of Gary's story about the announcement of Blanche moving to police commissioner role was that he'd lost 30 kilograms. And you can see in the photo, he's slimmed down, he looks good. But apparently he wanted to avoid being caricatured as a Chief Wiggum character with the donuts and the fat police commissioner. So I found that amusing. But good for him.
And in fact, he made that comment himself. He did. Laugh about it.
Yes, he did. So good to see he's got a sense of humour about it. Just before we wrap things up today, I can't really think of any other major police, or maybe, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, Mark, but any other major figures from WA Police who've gone on to have a particularly pronounced career in the private sector, at least in recent years?
Look, I certainly can't think of anyone that's made that kind of move. To go into a commercial enterprise in an operational role.
Be interesting to see what knowledge he brings to that. Look, as you mentioned before, Chris Dawson, he will be speaking at a politics and policy breakfast on Wednesday, 13th of July at Crown Perth. Join us as we talk to the incoming governor about his life of duty. Go to businessnews.com.au and click on the events tab to make your booking today. Mark, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks for listening to Mark My Words with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer from Business News. For more information, please go to businessnews.com.au/podcasts. And to receive these regularly, search for Business News WA in iTunes or SoundCloud.